Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Crime with Holly. If you're new here, my name is Holly, and I have been a true crime podcaster for officially 6 years now. Totally crazy how fast time has flown. I originally started right after COVID struck with my old podcast, and now I've been on this new platform for over 2 years. I am very passionate about what I do, and I love every minute of it. Make sure you hit subscribe if you haven't already so that you're notified every single time a new episode goes live. I don't have any crazy case updates for you guys other than to say that the Corey Richens trial is officially underway. This week, it has been a lot of setting the scene with investigation and what happened in the early days after Eric was found deceased. I will say, however, that opening statements from the state was powerful. The state came out swinging, reading off text messages with a confirmed boyfriend of Corey Richens, which these text messages included I love yous and even plans of a vacation together, which was conveniently scheduled to take place a month after Eric's death. That is a very interesting detail that had my jaw on the floor. I had no idea about all of that, and I cannot wait until they get more into all of those nitty-gritty details. However, I will say she is innocent until proven guilty, and I do believe that the defense is doing a really good job kind of casting some reasonable doubt. I also have three Patreon members to give shout-outs to this week. A huge heartfelt shout out to Jay, Neri, and Michelle for joining the Patreon family. I adore all three of you beyond a reasonable doubt. Thank you to the three of you for backing me and the show and believing in what I do and being a part of this amazing little crime-loving community that I am building. I am beyond grateful. If y'all want to be like Jay, Neri, and Michelle, you can join the Patreon family as well for just $2 a month. When you join, you not only show me support, but you also get every single episode ad-free. Visit www.patreon.com/crimewithholly or visit the link in the description of this episode to join. Once again, thank you so much from the bottom of my heart, Jay, Neri, and Michelle. Before we dive into today's case, I do want to give some trigger warnings that this case involves a domestic violence relationship, sexual assault, and stalking of the victim. I know that domestic violence and sexual assault stories can be triggering for some survivors of abuse. And for those extra sensitive topics, I always want to try and give you guys a heads up. I also would like to remind everyone of the National Domestic Violence Hotline contact number. If you or anyone you know is in need of support or help, you can contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-7233. You can also text the word START, START, to the number 88788. And you can check out the website www.thehotline.org. I will also include all of this information in the description of this episode as well for anyone who may feel that they are ready to get help or know someone in need. Okay, guys, so let's go ahead and jump in to today's case, which is on the murder of Nicole Legger. Nicole Christine Legger was born on February 7th, 1979 in Fort Worth, Texas. She was born to her parents Richard Cox and Deborah Hudson. She grew up in the Fort Worth, Texas area and graduated high school from Burleson High School. There isn't a lot of information about Nicole's younger years, but I do know that she had a brother named Dustin and two sisters named Angela and Bree. At the age of 17, Nicole found out that she was pregnant, and she was pregnant with a son that she named Trey. Nicole raised him to the best of her ability as a single mom. She did whatever she could to provide for her son, including dancing in clubs, and she also worked as a stockbroker at a place called Southwest Securities. And Nicole had just been accepted into nursing school. In an interview I saw with Nicole's son, Trey, he smiled at the memories of his mom and just said how absolutely amazing she was. He said that she was both mom and dad to him because she was a single parent, and the two of them were very close. Nicole's good friend, Holly, described Nicole as someone who was just so big, almost that larger-than-life personality. She always had a bright smile on her face, and she was extremely independent. Nicole also made friends easily, and those who knew and loved her most admired and really looked up to her. On top of working so hard to provide for herself and her son, Nicole found time to volunteer at Habitat for Humanity, and she was also a member of a social group called the Moms Club. Though Nicole wasn't dealt the easiest hand being a single mom, things were on the up and up for her, and she was really looking forward to her future as a nurse once she finished school. And then she met Michael Adams. Michael Adams was a successful repo man with a beautiful home in an upscale Dallas suburb called Frisco. And really quickly, Nicole was just head over heels for Michael. He did things for her and treated her in a way that she had never experienced. And it was all of those sweet little gestures and little surprises that I think we all dream of. Things like finding sweet notes in her coat pockets when she left the house, random vases of flowers and other little surprises, and that is what really seems like drew Nicole in. He put her on a pedestal and treated her like an absolute queen. But her son Trey wasn't really sold on the guy. Something about him did not sit well with Trey, and one of those things was how over-the-top OCD Michael was. Trey recalls in a Crime Watch Daily interview that everything about Michael's home was crazy neat. Michael owned a pool table that was located on the second story of his home, and he refused to allow anyone to actually play pool on it. Inside of Michael's fridge, the soda cans and condiments had to have the labels all facing perfectly so. He even had a huge couch that was shaped like a crescent moon that he refused to allow anyone to sit on it. When you look at the pictures of this man's house, it looks like something that was out of a home magazine. Every single item in his home had its own place, and everything was organized and well kept, right down to his organization inside of his closet with color-coordinated clothing and meticulous organization with his gun cases. Now, I do want to just stop here and say that having OCD and being very specific about the way you want your house to look doesn't mean anything bad. But for Trey, he was really bothered about this quality that Michael held. On the shelf of Michael's closet, he kept his firearms inside their boxes that were labeled and sorted by the caliber of the gun, and he had a lot of guns. Nicole was in love with Michael and really felt that he treated her so amazing, and she was ready to take their relationship to the next step. So she moved herself and her son Trey into his home to begin a life as a family of three. Trey recalls that it was around this time that things within the relationship between Michael and his mother began to change. One evening, the three were having a spaghetti dinner at home, which spaghetti was Nicole's favorite meal. And either Nicole or Trey, one of them, accidentally dripped some sauce onto the tile flooring. Also, Trey had microwaved himself an extra plate, and from the sauce heating up inside of the microwave, it caused some splatter. This entire situation with the spaghetti sauce on the tile floor, the microwave situation, it set Michael off into a complete rage, and this created a week-long argument between Nicole and Michael, and this became the norm inside of that household. Michael couldn't stand the little things that Nicole and Trey did that weren't up to his standards with his OCD. It was a constant fight about the littlest of things. But for Michael, he would completely blow up. He would fly off the hinges. After 2 months living within the home, Nicole had enough, and she packed herself and Trey up, and they moved out. Instead of the relationship completely ending, things took a surprising turn. Michael picked up Nicole for a date and showed up in black slacks and a black button-up shirt. He took Nicole to a fancy dinner, and then the two went back to his house where Michael got down on one knee and proposed. And Nicole accepted. Her son Trey recalls her being so excited and giddy over the proposal, and it wasn't long before he and his mother moved back into Michael's house. But this arrangement was also short-lived because Michael and Nicole got into an explosive fight that left her with a fractured finger. Though I do not know what this fight was about, I do know that Michael was so pissed off that he grabbed Nicole's hand, forcefully ripped off her engagement ring, and that is what caused the fracture to her finger. This was the last straw for Nicole. She and Trey moved out for a second time, and the engagement was off. Nicole got an apartment for herself and her son and tried settling into a new norm for them. But while living in this apartment, weird things began happening. The first instance was when Nicole and Trey arrived home one evening. They found that their front door of their apartment had been left open. Both recall it being closed and locked earlier in the morning, and no calls had been placed for maintenance to come and fix anything. But what was more troubling about the door being left open was that their sweet chihuahua they had named Penelope was missing. Their only conclusion on how the door would have been left open was that Michael, who apparently had a key to the apartment for whatever reason, had come to the apartment while they were gone and let the dog out intentionally. Several days later, Trey and Nicole found their puppy dead on the side of the road because she had been hit by a car. Another time, Trey got a text from his mother while he was at school saying that she had just gotten home and that someone had come into the apartment and poured bleach all over their clothing. On another occasion, Nicole was looking out the window of her apartment towards where her car was parked, and she spotted a red glow coming from where her car was. She went out to the parking lot to see what it was and found that her car had been lit on fire. Nicole suspected that Michael Adams was responsible for all of the mishaps that had been happening within her life. But she was financially strapped and was unable to purchase a new car for herself and had to ask Michael to help buy a new one. So Michael agreed and co-signed on a car for her. After Nicole had been driving it for a while, she tried to get Michael to agree to take his name off the lease. She went over to his home one evening with the paperwork that was needed for him to sign and to pick up the remainder of her belongings that she had left at his home. While there, Michael cooked a spaghetti lunch for her. After eating most of her plate of spaghetti, she got up and began gathering her things when she started to feel like the room was spinning. And quickly, whatever was happening to her started hitting her hard. What Nicole doesn't realize in this moment is that Michael had added a knockout drug to her spaghetti sauce, and this was just the beginning of a whole new nightmare.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
After ingesting what she believed was a nice spaghetti lunch from her ex-boyfriend Michael Adams, Nicole Legger started to feel funny. At this point, Nicole was still conscious and aware of her surroundings, but she physically was unable to move her arms and legs. Michael takes Nicole into the bedroom and removes all of her clothing. While she laid naked on the bed, unable to move or fight him, Michael pulls out a very large sex toy. Nicole at this point is pleading with Michael, saying no, please don't, but he refuses to listen to her pleas. Michael then violently assaulted Nicole with the sex toy while she remained unable to move her body or to put up any kind of fight. What is absolutely tragic about this point of the story is that I was able to hear from Nicole's mouth what had happened to her because she was eventually able to report it. She gave a detailed statement to Frisco, Texas Police Detective Scott Greer. In the recorded statement, Nicole goes on to tell Detective Greer that she and Michael had never used sex toys within their bedroom. She continues to say that at one point during the assault, Michael bends over her and puts the sex toy inside of her and begins taking pictures of her in this position. She says that though they had taken sexual pictures together before, it was nothing like what was happening to her in that moment. It was after this that she finally passed out completely, and when she wakes up again, she has her arms bound behind her back with rope and a large piece of duct tape covering her mouth, stretching across one side of her face to the other. While Nicole was unconscious, Michael used her phone to text her son Trey, saying that she was staying at a friend's house that night so he wouldn't become worried about her not coming home. Michael eventually untied her and she was able to run out of the home completely naked and ran to a neighbor's house where she began banging on the door, screaming for help. But he caught up with her quickly and drug her back inside. He took Nicole into the garage where he had laid out a tarp and threw her on top of it. There, he had handcuffed her hands and zip-tied her feet together. In the recorded statement, Nicole says that Michael tried to pull her hair out, but then decided that he was going to cut it off with scissors. While she laid there alone, completely naked, bounded by zip ties and handcuffs, she slowly worked to free her feet, but she was unable to get free of the handcuffs. She realized that she wasn't going to get out of this alive unless she tried to play nice to Michael. When he came back to where she was, she started to talk to him, asking him questions on what his plans were going to be. She asked if he was going to kill her, and he said he didn't know what he was going to do with her yet. From there, she told him he just needed to calm down, that he overreacted and that the two of them could work through this and go to therapy together. She also promised him that she wouldn't press charges if he let her go and that they'd work through their differences. When he finally let her go, she instantly went to police and filed a report. During the interview with Detective Scott Greer, he asks if she wants to file charges. And she is adamant that she wants to bury him, saying that if she doesn't press charges, he's going to kill her. That he can't control his anger and he will, without a doubt, kill her if he doesn't go to jail. She then proceeds to ask Detective Greer how fast are they going to be able to arrest him? And he says that they still need to work through some stuff before they can. And in the audio statement, you can hear the worry in Nicole's voice when she hears that they can't just go and arrest him right then and right there. She once more repeats that she knows he's going to end up killing her. Cops were able to obtain a search warrant, and inside the trunk of his white Lexus, they found all of the evidence from Nicole's attack. They found the sex toy, the rope, the zip ties used to bind her, the duct tape with her hair stuck to it, and they found the spaghetti and the jar of sauce that Michael used to drug Nicole. Michael had gathered everything from the attack and had planned to completely dispose of it all, but he was arrested before he could do so. Michael was arrested and charged with sexual assault and aggravated kidnapping, which he pled not guilty to. And this is when the system completely failed Nicole. Those charges, if found guilty, could have meant life in prison for Michael Adams. But he was about to post bail and was let out while they awaited trial. Nicole was absolutely terrified that Michael was going to hunt her down and finish what he started. She and Trey packed up their belongings and moved to a new home in Melissa, Texas, which was in a completely new county. Nicole was so worried that he was going to find her that she put the house that she rented and all of its utilities under a friend's name. She had thought she covered all of her bases and that she was going to be able to lay low until the court proceedings were finished. But one afternoon, on the doorstep of her new home, she found a chilling message. On the porch laid a tarp and a set of handcuffs. Authorities and prosecutors believe that this was Michael's way of saying, "I found you," and that this tarp and handcuffs was a threat to her about what had previously happened. Michael did not want Nicole to testify in court, and to authorities, this was his way of telling her that she better not. Nicole and everyone else was completely stumped on how he could have tracked her down. She had done everything she could within her power to hide where she had moved to. She laid low to the best of her ability, yet he somehow found her. Authorities later learned that Michael had placed a tracking device on Nicole's car and was tracking her every movement from his work computer. After this disturbing porch message to Nicole, she was trying so hard to continue to be on the lookout and be cautious of her and Trey's surroundings. She would tell Trey if she's not at home, do not go outside, and if he was to see Michael at the home, he needed to call 911 immediately. On September 9th, 2013, 17-year-old Trey got ready for school like he always did. Prior to leaving the house, Trey entered his mom's room where she was still lying in bed, and he gave her a kiss on the forehead, and this was something that he did every day, which I find so sweet. He told her that he loved her and that he would see her when he got home from school. When Trey got home from school, he found that the front door was unlocked, even though he made sure to lock it before he left. When he entered the home, he got an odd sense that something just wasn't right. He walked upstairs where he found that his mom's bedroom door was closed, and so he knocked on it, but she didn't respond. He tried to open the door and found that it was locked. Trey was able to get down on the floor and peek under the door to the best that he could, and while he did that, he was able to see his mom's foot hanging off the bed, so he assumes that she's still asleep. So he begins knocking a little harder on the door, and still, no response. Trey then went into the kitchen where he grabbed a ballpoint pen and took it apart and used the ink cartridge to pick her bedroom lock. When he finally gained access into the room, he found his mother lying on the bed with her underwear down around one ankle. Her shirt was lifted over her chest, and she had been shot twice in the face. Everyone knew instantly who was responsible for her murder, but Michael claimed that he had an alibi, which Michael had been at a Home Depot shopping and was found on security footage sometime during the time that police believed the murder had taken place. Also inside the master bedroom, cops found that there was two used condoms from two different men. So even though the big neon sign is pointing at Michael as having been involved, cops still had to investigate every possibility. And it took them 6 months before they finally arrested Michael Adams. The reasoning it took so long for their arrest was due to the fact that DNA evidence takes a while to be processed. The DNA inside both condoms did not match Michael's, and again, belonged to two different men. But authorities found Michael's skin cell DNA on the outside of one of those condoms. Authorities believe that Michael had gone into the bathroom after the murder to potentially wash his hands, and he had spotted the used condoms lying on the floor next to the trash can. And Michael was so OCD that the thought of this condom lying on the floor bothered him so much that he picked it up and put it in the trash can, ultimately leaving behind the skin cell DNA on the condom. During Michael's murder trial, other evidence had been presented to further incriminate him. Inside of a storage locker that he had owned, authorities found a whole arsenal of guns. After ballistic testing was done on many of the guns, they found that one of them was the gun that fired the bullets that took Nicole's life. Prosecutors' theory on why he killed Nicole was to prevent her from testifying in the sexual assault and kidnapping case that was pending against him. When the trial came around, Nicole's son, Trey, remembered being scared to be inside the courtroom and that he had only briefly made eye contact with mother's killer. The first witness was Detective Scott Greer. While on the stand, it came out that Detective Greer was doing a whole lot more than just investigating the first initial sexual assault case. After first initially interviewing Nicole and the start of his investigation into her sexual assault case, he became romantically interested in Nicole. And soon the text messages and phone call exchanges were to discuss more than her attack. The relationship between the two escalated from talking to exchanging spicy emails that were very, very sexual in nature, as well as Nicole sending Detective Greer lots of sexy nudes and topless pictures. It also came out that not only did Scott Greer have this inappropriate relationship with Nicole, but he had done it to three other women. In an interview with Crime Watch Daily, Nicole's good friend Holly says that she believes that if Scott had been more focused on serving and protecting Nicole and not focused on getting nude pictures, that maybe things could have been different. Because of the information that came out, the defense worked hard to discredit Scott Greer and his testimony. And though this made him look bad and potentially seem like he wasn't a credible witness, the prosecutors on the case were confident that despite Scott Greer's shady doings, they had a solid case against Michael Adams. While in the courtroom, the jury heard the recording of Nicole telling detectives about her assault, and they also heard her repeatedly say how she knew Michael was going to kill her. After just 2 hours of deliberations, the jury came back with a verdict and found that Michael Adams was guilty of capital murder. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. While this is justice for Nicole, and her killer will never be outside of prison walls ever again, it still doesn't make things easier or better. Her son had to grow up without his mother. She wasn't there for his high school graduation, she will never be there for his wedding day and to see him become a father. Her friends have to live with wondering if they could have done something differently to help get Nicole out of such a terrible situation. Murder hurts so many people in so many ways. Again, I want to remind everyone who may be in need of help or know someone in need, you can contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline 24/7. You can contact them at 1-800-799-7233 or text START to 88788 or visit thehotline.org. There's so many resources and ways to get help through this hotline, and I encourage anyone who is in need to please do so. Crimesters, that is all that I have for this week's episode. Make sure that you're a part of my private Facebook group by searching Crime with Holly Podcast Discussion Group. In there, I share all information and pictures pertaining to the cases that I cover, and I also encourage everyone to share all things true crime. If you'd like to follow me on Instagram and keep up with all the things that I'm doing in life, you can find me at Crimeaholly. And if you would like more true crime content, you can find me on TikTok at crimewithholly.podcast. Lastly, shout out once more to Jay, Neri, and Michelle for joining the Patreon family. All right, you guys, that is all I got for you. Until next time, be aware and take care. Bye-bye.